By the way, we ought to give you a check.
What's that?
We need to give you a check.
Yeah, I actually got a follow-up to find out whether or not I have a feeling that.
I'd like to call this meeting to order at 6:02.
Chairman Rosenblum.
Here.
Vice Chair Cushingham.
Here.
Director Wood.
Here.
Director Duquette.
Here.
And Secretary Shackelford here.
All right. Okay, the first item on the agenda is a public input. Yes, Wes.
Wes Lou for the recording. I'd just like to offer some thanks for all the hard work from Matt and the plowing crew. I was at the airport on Thursday night, and I was very pleasantly surprised to find my aisle had gotten its first pass, so that my plow really only had to move the snow next to the building. I stopped by Saturday, I think, and thanked Matt personally, but I'd like you to know that I think that I would appreciate their hard work.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Any other public input? Okay. We have some guests today. On the agenda is the Folkston Boy Scouts. Carl, would you take this?
Okay. So, Ben Dibble is here from the Boy Scouts. He wants to present about the campery that's coming up in May.
May. Yeah. Where do you want me to stand? Should I address you guys or them or combination of the above?
You can stand wherever you wish.
All right. I'll stand over here because people behind me. No, it doesn't
throwing
make
range.
Stuff.
Pardon? You have to be within throwing range.
Throwing range, yes, I am. So the plan, proposal is to use some property at the end of Perimeter Road to hold the Boy Scout Camporee on May 5th, 6th, and 7th. That's the first weekend in May. It will be a combination of Boy Scout Camporee and CERT Community Emergency Response Team will also be involved. They will be doing some training and recertification for them. Boy Scouts will be doing some training and hopefully working on merit badges if you're familiar with those are. Merit badge requirements. Those are things that they need to do to earn their Eagle or other preliminary badges. We plan on doing emergency preparedness, first aid, search and rescue, fire safety as the merit badge requirements. We hope to include the area Nashville Police Department, Nashville Fire Department. And I'll get into that a little bit further as I go through what we're going to be doing. In general, scouts will be arriving. I will be there Friday morning, if not earlier, to start setting up. We'll then have, on Friday afternoon, Boy Scouts in the ages 12 to 17, plus leadership. Usually it's in a ratio of about 1 to 6. One adult to six scouts. That's about a ratio if you need that. The scouts will be bringing in porta potties, trash facilities, things like that to make sure that there's no trash left. Plus, we usually leave it cleaner than we find it, which is always a nice thing. It will be carry in, carry out, so we will not be leaving anything there. The porta potties will get delivered early and taken out a little later, but that's not anything I can do a whole lot about. They deliver Monday or deliver Friday, pick up Monday. We will be hopefully, if approved, using above ground fires. The Boy Scouts have gotten away from putting a campfire right in the ground because, as the saying goes, it's scorched earth. There's nothing that will grow there because it sterilizes the ground. So now we use things like not the chimney thing, but along those lines, the fire pits in your backyard on your patio, we use those kind of things. So that's all above ground, and we carry out the ashes with us. As far as insurance, the Boy Scouts will be providing Nash Airport with an insurance waiver. Schedule for the weekend looks something like this: Friday afternoon, Boy Scouts start showing up around 5. As I said earlier, I'll be there earlier Friday morning to start setting up and putting out orange hurricane fencing and yellow flagging and flagging off the runway and all sorts of, the aprons and things like that. We'll camp out Friday night. Saturday morning around 9 a.m., the Cub Scouts will start showing up. They're going to have an event called First Responder, which is one of their current pins. and they will be there. Hopefully we'll be able to get National Fire and Police to provide a vehicle so the kids can look and check it out and all that kind of stuff they do. Possibly Young Eagle static display. Boy Scouts are not allowed to, or Cub Scouts are not allowed to use to fly at their age. And in, with this number of people, which I didn't cover for some reason yet, I'll get to that. With this number of people, it wouldn't be possible anyhow. So static display if they're interested in helping. The older scouts will actually be working with the younger scouts during the day that morning from 9 to noon. We're trying to encourage the older boys to take on the leadership role of teaching the younger kids about things like fire safety and first aid, things like that. 12:30 to 1-ish, we'll be having lunch. 1 to 5 o'clock, the Boy Scouts, after that, pardon me, at noon, the Cub Scouts, gone. They're out of there. That way I don't have to worry about them so much. I don't have them, the younger kids in the 5 to 11-year-old range are now gone along with their parents, and they're out of the area. They represent around 150 kids and 75 adults, just if you're looking for raw numbers. In the afternoon, Boy Scouts from the 12 to 17-year-old group will be there. They'll be learning some first responder stuff as well, learning about the CERT group. Hopefully we'll have a smokehouse or possibly something resembling a smoke plane to try to get in and out of, practice their first aid, rescue methods. 5 o'clock, dinner comes around. 7 o'clock, we'll have a campfire. Again, it'll be in a big pit, but it'll be everybody. It'll be something of a, if you ever go to the end of Perimeter Road, there's that field, like up. There's a little bit of a hill on the left. We'll probably have them sit on the hill with a fire pit down front. We're going to have a little bit of a program. Usually we have a fairly long program Saturday night, but in this case we're going to have a short program, and hopefully around 8 o'clock or so we'll have another fire truck come in with lights and a police car come in, and then we'll set up an incident and go to incident command. We'll get a PA which says, okay, all scouts please report to your campsites, all senior patrol leaders please report to the incident commander, and then we'll go into a, and this is a drill, and we'll go into a drill in the dark at night, which will make a very different from what they're used to. That should be done no later than 11. We're probably going to shoot for 10:30 because we got to do a head count, make sure they all get back, we don't lose any. It's considered bad form. So, in general, that's the proposal. And as I, okay, so the numbers disappeared somewhere. Anyhow, so we're looking at approximately 180 to 200 camping Friday and Saturday night, another 150 or so coming in Saturday morning and then leaving again. I think we can fit them all in that area down there. We may ask to move into the wooded area, again, off to the left of the runway, past Perimeter Road, up to the fence to do some in-the-woods search and rescue, which could be a little more exciting for the kids as opposed to, I'm in a field, I can see everybody, so, you know, making it a little harder for them. Maybe we'll do that during the drill later that evening. And Sunday morning, we clean up and we're out of there by around 10:30. And I think that's it. Questions? And Tom and Taylor are here to answer questions for the CERT side.
Okay, so if I may make a comment about your request for your Young Eagle static display. So, you know, Young Eagles is a program where we fly kids. By the way, I'm the representative for the sponsoring chapter for that.
Okay.
So Young Eagles is a program where we fly kids between 8 and 17 years old. So if we put airplanes, if people put airplanes on static display, it won't be associated with the EAA in any way. It'll just be, you know, pilots who are interested in participating and, you know, don't mind kids, you know, looking at the airplanes and, you know, maybe having a seat in them, something like that. So, you know, we can certainly call for people who might want to bring a few, you know, few pilots who might want to bring their airplanes down and participate in that. But that'll be outside the scope of any kind of Young Eagles
program. Okay, all right.
What publicity, if any, will you have for the airport and the community about this?
What publicity will we have? Gosh, I haven't really thought about that too much. Generally speaking, we keep it within the Boy Scouts. But if frequently afterwards we'll have photos in the paper, what happens? I don't know if you're looking for... Do I hear you asking, should we have some publicity up front? Because I don't want... we've got the Boy Scouts, we don't necessarily want to have a whole bunch of other folks show up.
No, I would say after.
Oh, yeah, okay, after we'd say, yeah, thank you very much to the Nashua Airport, blah, 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 had a great time, pictures of kids with smiling, happy faces, and a prop behind them someplace.
And then, excuse me, to follow up on that, Nashua CERT, on the other hand, will do the same type of thing. We have a reporter on staff, and they'll come out. They'll do a community interest story, if you want to call it that. So there'll be publicity from that, and whoever participates will probably, they'll be named, that type thing. But we were also going to ask you in this meeting that if we do go forward with it, is there a way that you notify your neighbors along that fence line? Because there will be that activity going on until about 10, 11, and camping overnight. Is there a way that the airport reaches out to those, or don't you care? I mean,
Indian Rock Road, we can reach out to Indian Rock Road.
Yeah, because it's unusual activity, so we don't want to,
I think we should reach out to the alderman.
Yeah.
So, we were going to ask that.
The alderman for that ward.
Oh, okay.
Ward one.
Yeah, my lease is actually going to raise the same point. Jim Horan, who some of you know, lives down in the Rock Road area.
Do you expect to have any camera crews there?
It's been a lot. Since the World Wide Web has come around, it's been a lot harder to get folks like the Telegraph or camera crews or MUR or anybody. They don't have as much resources. But we can, if you're not adverse to it, we can certainly try that.
So if they call us, we should put them in contact with you, or should we tell them?
Yeah, I think it's just a closed event, so it's not like, hey, come on down. You don't want people. Come on down.
Right, well, yeah.
But it is a good community story.
Yeah.
It's a good partnership, three-way partnership. So.
Yeah, I would imagine that some of y'all would be interested.
Yeah, we can reach out, absolutely.
I have some questions about parking. Yeah. How far up further around do you think you'll come with the parking?
Not very. We're spacing it out. We think we've got space for camping and parking in the field.
Going to have a police officer or somebody directing?
We're reaching out to the local Explorer Post, the Nashua Police Explorer Post, and hoping we can get some help from them, and or we'll get other adults from our group to help run parking. We have to have somebody at the gate letting folks in and out, and so that's going to be an issue. It's going to be Saturday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Hopefully it's not going to be too much of a problem, and we will certainly take care that nobody blocks the roads, because we don't want that.
And to follow on that, for the tenants of the airport, at that key card gate is what we're talking about. All the scouts that come through are registered scouts. They'll be on the list. If they're not on the list, they don't get in, type thing. Same with the CERT members. So they'll be restricted access into the area, so they just can't get on and jump the fence and have access to the airport.
Which gate are you going?
15? I don't know what it is.
It's 15
called.
Or 16.
Yeah. They're right at the end of the perimeter road.
Yeah. It's in here somewhere.
I have a question. How many adult supervisors will be on the ground?
Probably 100-150.
Adults?
Yeah.
And
during the day.
And will there be overnight people awake supervising?
I can't guarantee that, but there are the scouts don't camp without their adults. The adults will be right there.
Okay. We should not be concerned that somebody's gonna get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and walk out onto the runway.
We're putting up the hurricane fencing, the orange, not just a piece of tape. We're putting the whole fencing up, and I think that should be, if that's not sufficient, let us know. But I think if we fence across there, as it shows in the images, I think that will keep any kid from wandering off. They'll have to go through the forest, and we'll have that flagged as well.
Yeah, the house is supposed to be ingenuity and all that
kind of thing.
Yeah. Is this a rain or shine event?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And what will the hours be that people would be coming in and going out of the gate?
From about 10 a.m. Friday to about noon on Sunday at the latest.
So, theoretically, around the clock.
Theoretically around the clock, but...
What time would you shut it down at night?
We'll probably have somebody there till 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night on Friday and Saturday night.
Okay. So, can you give me the hours you think it will be there? approximately the hour?
Oh, sure. 3 o'clock Friday. So 11 Friday night. And then probably 7 a.m. Saturday. What we're going to do, 7 a.m. Saturday to 11 o'clock Saturday night, and then 7 a.m. Sunday morning to 11, I'll say, because I want to get home before that. Okay. We're going to set up our headquarters right next to the gate.
Okay.
So we'll be right there. We'll have, you know, a tent set up, some pavilion-type things pop up, so we'll be right there. So we'll be within, you know, a short walk. Shorter than I had to walk to get here.
Okay, can we agree to have a joint walkthrough on the cleanup?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. The last time we did a camp out, we had a couple, 250 people. We had a Ziploc bag, lunch size, of trash. That's the kind of stuff, and I wouldn't be surprised if some of that was just stuff we found that had been there from before.
I believe that there's a comment somewhere in here about the need for a dumpster.
Yeah, I was going to ask you guys if you have a particular vendor that you use, because we want to have a dumpster with lids, right? So nothing flies down out onto it. But if, I don't know if the airport does that, or whether we should just contact Pinard. If we should contact your vendor or Pinard or somebody. Sorry, who?
If not, we're never going to come to the city if they're not opposed to
that. Okay. Oh, really? Oh, okay. All right.
If they're not opposed, I'd if you have some sort of like...
The big recycle bins?
Yeah, if there's something that's in particular, that's fine. Yeah. If not, we might go the words of the city to get something.
And they'll be delivering those dumpsters and picking them up with you guys at the gate.
Right.
Because they won't be able to run down there and open the gates for them.
Right.
Okay.
But if there's some sort of requirement you guys have for disposal or drafting or something, just let us know.
We don't have any.
Okay.
Are you looking for a motion from this board to approve the project as presented?
I would love that, because I've been going out and telling people we have a very firm maybe. A positive maybe. So it would be really nice if we can go back and say, yes, we've got our approval. We're happy to work with you guys. If something comes up in the meantime, we'd like to be able to do this again in the future, so we're not going to burn any bridges or anything like that. That's not a good analogy. Just stop where you're ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From the DOT?
Yeah.
Oh, no,
Scouts.
I was just curious. If we approve the waiver, from
I'll make a motion to allow the Board of Scouts of America to refile the jailbreak. Subject to receipt of the insurance. Okay. Is there a second?
Second. Discussion. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carried. Who do I get the waiver to? These gentlemen.
Carol, you know who these guys are, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. And if you have any questions, then just, you know, pop upstairs and come see me.
Yeah, I've got it. Okay.
So if I can have a follow-up question or two, now that we're approved, is there a point of contact with the airport fire department search and rescue? We can discuss having them participate if applicable, or how we're going to coordinate with Nashua Fire and police. We don't want to step on any toes, so offer to the airport first if they want to be the responders to the quote aircraft crash site and that type of stuff. So to work with them to develop that.
I have a recommendation that you discuss that with the chief's office.
Okay.
Because he may want to have a backup over here while they're down there or something along
that. Right. Yeah, point con. I don't know. No.
I have a number for you. Adam Cuneo. Adam.
Yep. Oh, is it?
Fire Marshal.
Nashua Fire?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Oh, it's the same. I didn't know.
The fire department.
Yeah.
It just happened to be.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, that's not an airport fire station.
It says it.
It says, but it's an airport. It's a fire station located next to the airport.
Gotcha. All right.
You're welcome to stay for the rest of the meeting, but you don't feel, you need not feel obligated to.
All right.
They are really fun.
I can tell by reading the minutes how exciting they were.
If you leave early, we can talk about it.
Yeah, that's okay. I think
I'm
we'll
take that chance.
And we thank you for your indulgence
you
and approval.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to move on to the secretary report.
Okay, there are no minutes to there are no public minutes to approve because we're still working on transcribing into some various changes, so we'll have that next week. We have three non-public session minutes to approve, so I make a motion to approve the non-public minutes for the 17th, the 24th, and the 26th of January.
Second.
Mm-hmm.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Treasurer's report. In the packet you have the January financials, and I'm not at a point where I would like to have them approved quite yet, because I do have a couple of questions about some of the categorization of the expenses, and I want to work with the office to clarify that. But during the month of January, our revenue was about it was $46,107. The biggest variance for the income side was on snow removal. We had budgeted $6,000 and we received that $8,600. We recorded that. As a result of that, we also had excess wages and fuel costs. So those expenses are in line. So that's all I would like to report on the financials at this time, and we'll have more next month. Any questions? Communications.
We have three communications. The first two are from Don Davidson. The first one was a submitting his availability to sit in as the interim airport manager, and the second one was withdrawing that request. The third communication is an email from Wes Liu on the subject of a response that we received from New Hampshire DOT on the upcoming pavement renovation project. I know we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, we'll detail all that out. Yeah.
So I won't read that. Okay.
I wrote a copy.
We have multiple copies here, too, sir.
We don't want to.
Thank you. Next is the tower report. That was included in the packet. The number of the traffic count for the month was just 56 shy of last year. The total was 3,756. For the office, for the record, there is another traffic count report that we have generated that shows the percentage all by month and year to date. That was not included in the packet, so hopefully we'll have that for next month. Any questions? I'd like to also announce that we have hired a new office manager, Susan Clancy, is returning back and has started on Monday, last Monday, and she's diligently getting us up and running and back into the swing of things, and we appreciate her coming back and
Very happy to have you.
Airport manager report.
President.
Tired.
I really don't have anything that we're not already scheduled to talk about. Thank you very much for the comment about the folks on the snow plowing. And I'd appreciate it if you're out there and see them. Hearing it from you guys is far more than hearing from me, so we appreciate that. Other than that, there is an issue with the removal of those trees over on Sharon Road, but we'll get into that some other time. I'll put that on the back burner. It's not a priority issue right now. That's basically it.
Thank you. Airport engineer.
Good afternoon. Good evening now. Sorry. Members of the board, Eric Strand for the record. I'm going to actually hand it off for the first project. It says grooming, but just for the clarification, we actually have three projects that we're administering on behalf of the board. I'm going to hand it over to Matt Caron to talk about the first project, which is the airport master plan.
Thanks, Eric. Okay, so the airport master plan over the past month, over the past month, we've completed a draft of chapter one, which is prepared and ready for distribution to the master plan committee once that committee is established. We've been working on chapter two, the existing conditions chapter, that's probably 90% complete at this point in time. There are a few elements within that chapter that really require input from the master plan committee. So we'll be able to clean that up once we get that committee established. We started working on chapter three, which is the existing environmental conditions and sensitive areas chapter. We've also started working on the airport layout plan, and that will be something that's actually ongoing throughout the course of the master plan as information becomes available. So, lastly, I did speak with Director Woods, I think it was last week, might have been this week or last week.
Yeah, and
I know you're starting to put together a master plan committee, which is really good. So, if there's anything that we can do or that I can do to help establish that, please let me know. I'm happy to jump in.
Want to address that at this point?
So, I haven't done a heck of a lot with the master plan committee just yet, but I was thinking it would make sense to go if you could please do that.
Sure.
I'll get to know Gail one. Yes, indeed. And who out here in the audience would like to be on the master plan committee? Go.
Greg.
Okay.
I'm nominating Shane to. He can't hear tonight, so.
Happy to help. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
How large do you want the committee to be, Farrell?
Probably no more than. I think no more than five.
And would you have some?
Did you want to have some measures? Pilots or?
Well, you know, Greg raised his hand.
Yeah, Greg, Shane,
Sean, and Jenny.
Anybody else?
Plus two board members.
Yeah, okay, so actually, it sounds like you have some.
It's on the first one today of the month.
It went great for me.
Okay, well, I'll be reaching out to you folks. Thank you.
What's that? Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's not bad. Right. No problem. That's okay. I'm kidding.
I'm going to go to project number two, pavement maintenance. I thought last month we had put the alpha ramp issue to bed. Unfortunately, it proved ugly head again, for lack of a better term. New Hampshire DOT, at the request of the board at the last meeting, we went back to New Hampshire DOT and requested a project change at pavement maintenance down on the alpha ramp. We all have seen the resounding no from New Hampshire DOT that is not authorized for AIP funding. They're just not saying that you can't do it, they're just saying that they're not going to participate in funding. So we went back to the drawing board, Director Duquette and I kind of put our heads together to try to find some options. We came up with two options, but I've I'm going to actually bypass those and go right to option three, which is a better option.
This just did better
option. This just did better option.
Like 2 hours ago.
So I actually did some digging and communications with the entity on some other creative funding sources. We found one, which is to borrow or buy non-primary entitlements from two different options in the state. D Memorial has expiring non-primary entitlements that would match the project needs. They would be looking for you to purchase their non-primary for their, so that they can use it for their local share of other projects. But they have expiring funds, which means that they're going to lose them regardless. So you can probably negotiate a decent price. Through my communications with them today, they are interested, obviously, because they think that they can get money for it. Something we can discuss, hold that thought. The other airport is Mount Washington. Mount Washington doesn't know that you can buy that, that you would buy them, but also they think that you can either give them or borrow them with the option to give it back in future years and others. So what that entails is effectively, as you guys all know, and I think we've talked about this ad nauseum, but non-primary entitlement, you get $150,000 of federal funds every single year to use at your discretion. Airport like Mount Washington doesn't have a project, so they're looking for someone within the state to take it. And speaking with their chairman tonight, just before the meeting, they're actually going to be meeting tonight as well to discuss getting it from you guys. They actually were excited to be able to get another airport within the region and within the state. So we're trying to figure out what they're looking for now. They're going to discuss what they're looking for in return, whether it was just giving it to you guys, which is a very likely probability, or if they're going to want to borrow it back in future years. Couple of issues just potentially with borrowing it from another one. The way that the funding works is if you're going to take discretionary funds, which you guys always will be because most of your projects are over that 150 cap, and you guys are doing projects almost every single year, which means you're not accruing enough to be able to use anything but discretionary or state portion of the fund, you have to first exhaust all of your non-primary. So it does jeopardize your future years. So one of the things that, if you look at your CIP, which is in the back of the agenda, your next year's project is a purchase of SRE for about $300,000, which is FAA and New Hampshire DOT will look for you guys to have your 150 of non-primary entitlement that you will get in 2018 to put towards that and then state apportionment. Your probability of getting 300,000 of state apportionment, because it's very low rating on the discretionary form poll, is very slim. So it's not unprecedented, but it would be very rare if you get that. So we would advise you not to give it back in 18, but wait until 19 when you have something that, you know, ranks higher, if you will. If you look at your 2019 project, it has a higher rating of 68, which is very similar to the
state.
It's attached to the back of your agendas. I think it's page 2. It's after Carol's email. Keep going. It looks like this. It didn't make the packet. Okay. I'll bring copies in the paper. It was attached to the back. It's not a big deal. Probably it's a bigger size, so it's not a big deal. But effectively, your 2019 project is a payment maintenance project, which rates about 68 by the current rating system under the AP handbook. And you would be able to expend your non-primaries elsewhere, give it to someone else and still receive discretionary funds. I did confirm that with DOT today. So what we would advise that the board does is to borrow the non-primary entitlement from Whitefield and go into negotiations with them to be able to do such. So
in summary, what that means is basically we do the entire Alpha ramp and destroy
it.
Pave it, the whole nine, the whole pit of the world.
Correct. We looked at other options of don't do anything and, you know, mark it off as an area that's not used for the public. We have some options which I present are up there, but honestly I would take them and forget about them. We looked at other options, which is to look at other portions of the project which could be removed to offset and start with doing the alpha ramp. There's not really a good fit for that within this project. Again, this project really maximized the dollars and was trying to stretch it as far as we can go And we would advise you, if you're, which is our understanding that you guys want to do the alpha ramp, is to go borrow it.
How much are we talking about here?
You're talking $140,000, which is about what we estimate. I would advocate that you, I would suggest that you borrow $150,000, their full non-primary, because it can get tricky with them if you only borrow a certain amount. Effectively, what happens is if you borrow $150,000 and you only use $120,000, the other you can accrue that non-primary into the next year. So it's not related.
You get a 5% on that. It's like we would.
You just pay, you're saying 5%, it's just an increased cost of 5% of whatever, of the 140.
So what are our chances right now? What do you think?
Your chances are very good. In communications with both Dean and with Whitefield or Mount Region, Mount Washington Regional, they're both willing to do such. It's just a matter of, the Dean one, what happened with Dean, Dean recently gave non-primaries, they sold their non-primaries to Concord Municipal for their 5% share. They, what happened is Concord borrowed about $175,000 and gave them 5% out of their general fund to just take their, and they don't have to give it back. So it was a, they effectively purchased their non-primary, which DOT and FA bought off on as a good option. Because it stayed in the region, it stayed in the state, and they didn't have to worry about it and moving forward. And it allowed Concord to be able to do their primary. Now, Mount Washington, they don't seem interested in buying it. They just want to give it to another airport in the state. They actually, when I called them today, they were like, oh, we were actually just talking about giving it to another airport. We didn't know who to give it to. So we gladly give it to Nashua if we vote to do such, which they were going to do that tonight, as long as they didn't get canceled. It's not what. He was going to call me tonight and confirm that they were going to do that. So.
So what do you need from this board at this point?
Basically, I think it's a matter of basically a vote to accept that option pending the approval by Mount Washington, right? I mean, that's basically what it comes down to.
Yeah, I think two votes are needed. One, authorize the reconstruction of Alpha Ramp. And then two, to authorize Gail to work with both Whitefield and New Hampshire DOT to come up with a deal in conjunction with you guys in communication to be able to borrow their non-primary settlement to do that.
And if that falls through, then we're on.
We got our plan B's and C's.
I don't think they're necessary, but we do have plan B's and C's, and the board will have to make. But we'll probably have to come back to a special meeting very soon to talk about that. I envision we'll have an answer to this very quickly. So by the end of the week.
Basically, for everybody up here. Well, I can, but everybody's seen this one, right? This is what's programmed right now. So we didn't do anything. Nothing happened today. This gets ripped up and turfed, and nobody wants that, right? So that's what's programmed today. No more action needed. This thing's on the rails, right? Essentially, what happens then with this option, that one, not that one yet, that one today. It basically is that, right? So all that gets done. It's all new pavement. We're done. Right, so that's what the getting this additional funding, because the whole crux of this has been nobody's saying you can't, they're just saying they're not going to pay for it. If we had the money tree, we'd go pick $150,000 off of it, and we've already done this, and we wouldn't even have any discussions, right? So that's essentially what this option does, and this vote would do. And the plan B,
I don't think we need to.
You want to talk about the B?
Yeah.
Well, we have a B.
I would definitely
take
a motion.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I think you have. My understanding was that the last meeting, the authority voted that, and we've not heard that. So that's not the plan.
Well, we voted to do an alternate. The alternate was shot down. We actually never voted to change the scope of work. So we were pursuing a scope change that was shot down. We actually never changed the program, so that makes any sense.
I'm not sure it does, but if you can fund it all, then
we're changing it now.
So then I would put forth a motion. Number one, that we approve the change of scope to reconstruct the operator. That's the first motion.
Second.
Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
So that's the first one. Second motion would be, what would the second motion be, Eric? That we
the funding of that construction would be?
We authorize Gail to negotiate on behalf of the board to go into borrowing.
How about just acquisition?
Acquiring of. There we go. The acquisition of non-primary entitlements from said airport.
So the motion is we authorize Gail on the behalf of the National Airport Authority to engage in acquisition of non-primary entitlement funds from Mount Washington, Wakefield, or
Mount Washington or Dean Memorial.
Or Dean Memorial. Available, let's just keep it that way.
Sure.
Acquire available non-primary funds, period.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much.
All right, now, Alpha Ridge put to bed, correct? Good. All right.
Let me just like to make a comment for everyone's edification. New Hampshire DOT did not direct us to do anything, and they did not disapprove anything. What they said was, if we want to go ahead and patch the Alpha ramp, we would have to use our own money, because they wouldn't approve the use of federal funds to cover areas that had already exceeded its life expectancy. That's pretty funny.
Yeah,
thank you, by the
way.
Thank you for explaining that.
Just so you know, so New Hampshire DOT and the FAA don't make rulings on what you can and can't do. They just tell you what's eligible for funding. That's the bottom line. So in this case, they just said it wasn't eligible for AIP fund or state portion in this case. That is what they said.
And I appreciate Joe and Gail working very hard and diligently to come up with these additional funds. It was very easy.
Eric, we're looking at a start date of March, right?
I was going to get to that. We have signed construction contracts with Continental, so you guys are in agreements with them to do the said work. We've communicated with them about the scope changes. They don't care as long as they know what it is before they start construction, so they're on board with it. They have requested a pre-con be held the first week of March, and they want to start on April 1st, weather dependent, obviously. We don't have a schedule for them, so we can't speak to the operational impacts at this point. I actually sent their project manager another email just saying we'd like to schedule that first week. I gave him a couple dates to propose. In communications with them verbally, we had talked about the 7th, which is Tuesday, at 10 a.m. here at the airport. Does that work for you guys?
7 March?
7 March. Does that work for the board?
Yes.
That is the pre-construction conference. Again, the pre-construction conference does a lot of things. It's a requirement of the FAA to take funds from them, but the biggest reason is the operational impacts and kind of setting the pecking order for how things are going to work in terms
safety
of
plans,
safety plan, safety operational impacts. It's a good place for the airport to take from what the operational impacts, so you then can disseminate it to your users and say, this is when we're going to be operational. Obviously, we'll work behind the scenes with the board and the airport manager to make sure you guys know what the operational impacts are and can communicate them. We'd also offer that we come down and meet with users to be able to make sure everyone knows what's going on in real time as well. So there will be some operational impacts. As soon as we have a handle on what they are and when they are, we'll start coordinating with you with the board to make sure that you know what they are. Construction's a dynamic thing. It's going to be ever-changing. We're going to have a full-time resident engineer. Gail's only 15 minutes away, so we'll have a handle on it. And we work very well with both Continental and the airport crew to make sure that things go seamlessly.
What's the projected end date?
I don't have one yet. We don't have a construction schedule, but it's I believe it was a 60-day calendar, so it's a two-month process. So 60 calendar days, start to finish. Obviously, weather is going to be a factor. It depends on how wet spring is. It is a paving job. We want it to be dry, and we can't forecast the weather. If we get more snow, it could be a May 1 start, depending on the weather. So we're going to have to wait and see what happens in the next couple weeks.
If you want the entire board to be at that March 7th meeting, we'll have to call a special meeting.
I don't think it's necessary.
You and I talked about maybe you and me.
I think Bob and Joe and Matt and I should definitely be there because it does have operational impacts. We just want to make sure areas are closed accordingly. And then you guys from that can disseminate it to the rest of the board. It works well, I think. I think having you all there is overkill. If other people have questions, they can contact us directly, or other board members.
Are we all good with that?
Yeah. All right. The only other thing is, due to all the changes that have occurred, we sent a supplemental. I sent a supplemental to Joe just for review. It just needs to be looked at by the board and authorized. If you have any comments, just go ahead and record it.
Yeah,
we're busy. So, any questions on pavement maintenance project? All right, good. Grooming project.
Just before we leave the topic, this is one phase of a multi-phase plan. And given all the difficulties that this phase is running through, I'm going to encourage the board to take a look at the future. And maybe it needs to be replanned into smaller chunks that can be better digested by both the airport, Gale, and the funding.
We actually had already talked about that.
Okay. Yeah, the way that it's kind of set up now, Wes, is just, and so everyone knows, is that it's set up, we put money in there for maintenance. We didn't earmark it for any locations other than the intent was to start reconstructing or rehabbing areas throughout the airport that are in desperate need of repair. We know that there's a lot in and around T hangars, there's the inner taxiway, there's a whole bunch of areas that are in need of repair. So the intent was just to get it in the CIP. I think the board's intent, correct me if I'm wrong, was to get it into the CIP so you had it earmarked and could do things in the future. If you don't ask for it, you'll never get it. So that was kind of the intent. So, all right, grooming project. We submitted the 30% design to the board. We actually met last week with Bob and Joe to go over the 30% design. It was a good, very productive meeting. We've received comments back from New Hampshire DOT, all of them very minor. We're actually proceeding at this point with the 75% design, which is due for submission at the end of the month on February 28th. Shortly following that, we want to schedule a 75% design review meeting, again, with Bob and with Joe. Just to go over them, go over more detail, make sure everything's being met, all your intents are being met, make sure the board understands what the project entails and what the plans include. Things are going very smoothly. I put in the agenda the proposed project schedule through grant application just so we can kind of see where we are. We're on schedule. We, despite getting a contract late and start a late start, we accelerated it and we're meeting and they're going to hopefully exceed the deadlines that are set forth here. So the good news is we're on schedule for an April 1 deadline, a grant deadline to New Hampshire DOT.
So I'll just maybe hit some of the details that we covered. So in our 30% meeting, we got into some of the details, the nitty-gritty. The two big takeaways for everybody to be aware of is that the Groove Seal project will be a two-phase project. So the first phase is going to be, we said, probably May, late spring.
The first phase will be either the fall of 17.
Sorry, the fall of that. Sorry.
Fall of 17, or depending on when funding becomes available, early spring of 18. Right. We anticipate that funds will be available in the late summer, early fall, and we'll do a fall 2017 construction for the grooving portion of the project, phase one.
Right. So the impact there for the users is that's going to be done at night. And that's going to be a 10-day consecutive period. We probably figured it's probably going to be more than 7, maybe 2 5-day periods. I think we decided no weekends at this point. But count on a 10-day consecutive period, at which point at night's going to be defined from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m., runway will be closed, right? So probably not a huge impact for most people. But we wanted to put it out there as early as possible that we don't have a specific date yet, but this fall, well, hopefully, when do you think we'll get that date nailed down, or is it going to be after the grant award happens, and that's just what it's going to be?
Typically, the way that the funding cycles have worked in recent history is that we're seeing the funds in September. In this case, because of the nature of the project, that's not a problem. So if we get received funds in September, we still, as long as we don't get a really cold October, should be able to do this project in October.
Right.
But if it goes until September 30th, the end of the fiscal year, that they don't issue the funds and then government council process, it could be in the middle of October before we even officially have the funds, then we know. So my guess is September 1st of this year, we'll know whether or not it's going to be happening this fall or in the spring of 18.
So let's assume it's happening in the fall. Let's assume that schedule pans out for the fall. Either way, if it happens in the spring of 18 and fall of 17, still that 10-night period where we're shut down 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. The second phase, which is the rejuvenator and the resealing of the runway, that'll be, if it happens in the fall, that'll be in the spring, right? And if it happens in the, if the grooming happens in the spring, it'll be, well, yeah, I guess we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But
right.
But right now, the plan is that the rejuvenator and the remarking happens in the spring. That is going to be a five-day downtime, day, night, all the time, shut down runway downtime. So that's a solid block of time because, obviously, you have to seal it and let it cure and mark it, and all that stuff needs to have no airplanes on it, obviously.
So previous runway work, they marked it loosely without the taxiway of the runway. That keeps the flight schools going. Even if the main runway is closed in the fall, actually, a helicopter can be there.
Mm-hmm.
Is it potentially that included in the plan?
Eric, I'll defer to you.
The FAA will not authorize the use of Alpha, Taxiway Alpha, as a designated landing and takeoff.
Right. And Harrison Ford just did, yeah. So I think we
saw that on the news. With that being said, the airport in conjunction with the tower could probably do that. I've seen it done at other airports. It does pose liability and challenges because your taxiway is not set up as a runway. But honestly, your taxiway, it's always at the pilot's discretion, and if the tower authorizes it, you could do it. And my guess is the tower's probably not going to authorize it, but you're never going to get FAA to give you the blessing to authorize takeoffs and landings on your taxiway. So the cleanest method would be to close your facility during those 5 days. Just for clarification, the reason it really needs to be closed is because once you start the sealing process, you can't reopen it until you have your markings back down. It's not a runway. And that's the putting the pavement rejuvenator down is a 3-day process and marking it's a 2-day process. So that's why it's the 5 days, just so we all know.
Robert?
I'll just throw out there that I've been an air traffic controller for a long time. I've worked several different towers, and I absolutely have cleared people to land on taxiways many times. As long as it's a movement area. I'm sorry?
State your name for the record.
My name's Kevin Plant. So the rule from a control tower operator standpoint is that you can clear somebody to land as long as it's a movement area. Not allowed to clear somebody to land on a non-movement area.
And Alpha is a movement area.
Absolutely. Correct.
So we'll present it to the tower chief and get an answer.
I guess my question more had to do with, but I believe in the past it was remarked as a runway temporarily. So I don't know whether that is, would be covered by that, like all funding in that project.
We can ask the question.
Sure. We got lots of time. So let's ask the question.
We can ask the question.
And really, you know, it's a pretty straightforward project. There's not much more to it than that. I know there's some concern just from a public relations point of view with some of the noise that will be generated during the grooving. And I've talked to Alderman Schulman, and I think I don't just talk to you, Alderman, yet about the how we're going to handle that. But we're cutting the pavements. It's going to make some noise for a few nights. And I think the plan now is we're going to start at 1-4 and work that way.
We would recommend that you do that. The feeling is that you start at the 1-4 end where it's more residential than the 3-2
less residential, right?
Start at the 3-2 end, work towards 1-4.
We'll figure that out.
Yeah, we'll figure that out. There's you can look at it both ways, whether or not you start at the 1-4 end and then you build towards it and it gets louder towards the heavy residential side on the 3-2 end, or if you start at the 3-2 end, work away from home, get it out of the way. There's pros and cons to both. It's a decision that can be made. You know, there is a window of opportunity that the contractor may say, we're going to start at both ends and knock out the park and do it in 4 days. That's a possibility, too. Or do we restrict them from doing that? That's a decision that the board may want to make. We would advise not to put restrictions on what they can and can't do because if they want to get in with two pieces of equipment, start at both ends, that's an option they have.
Alderman McGinnis, we've had numerous conversations on how we can minimize the impact on neighbors and noise levels, etc. One of the discussions was if we do it in the fall, obviously
people are keeping their windows closed, probably the leaves are still on the trees, etc. I mean, we are not just plowing into this thing literally without being sensitive to the community.
Well, I certainly understand and appreciate your consideration of the constituency. I don't imagine that people would be so disturbed based on a project of this length. I mean, we're talking a few days.
Well, the Everett Turnpike,
I think, could be justified. Most folks are
they were grinding on the Everett Turnpike every night for 2 months to get it, and we all now have that beautiful road out there.
Thank you for the consideration.
I have a question about the markings there. So when the grinding starts, I presume it starts like right at the threshold?
The grooving?
Yeah.
The grooving, yeah, it'll start at the threshold.
Okay. So what does that do to the markings?
Nothing. You'll have cuts through the markings, but you'll still, from, you know, 1,000 feet up in the air, still look exactly the same. You know, there's no impacts to it. There's a lot of runways now that have grooves that you just groove right over. We've actually grooved right over existing markings and not remarked them. In this case, when we're putting the pavement rejuvenator down and sealing it, you kind of have to put markings back down. It's also good irony. It's been 5 years since your markings went down. It's time to put new markings down.
All right, thank you.
That's all I have on that project. Things are going smoothly. Things are progressing. Any questions?
Thanks for all your work.
The only other things I have here is that the boilerplate stuff, the DB update, we just started your 17 to 19 DB plan that's required that you can take federal funds. We should have a draft for you in the very near future. We'll send it to you and we'll coordinate with FAA and DOT to make sure it's approved and make sure you guys are in compliance with federal provisions. Something like that? That's all I have.
I have a question on the CIP projects that we have. When was the last time the board looked at that to determine whether all the projects are either viable or they might want to add or subtract some?
The CFP meeting was held in August last year, August the 16th. The board was involved with it. I believe the board authorized Gail to send what's here in this package to DOT. So the board has voted on it as recently as, I think it was November, that it went back to DOT. But you'll get another crack at it this coming year, because every year you sit down with DOT and the FAA and tell them what your wish list is and what your CIP wants those for. I mean, if you want, I can resend the CIP to everyone. You guys can take another look at it. It's got a lot of projects on here. The way that you guys have kind of set up your CIP, the way that the board has set up the CIP, is that it's got all your projects, your wish list, if you will, of all the projects, and they're in out years. You know, you can see here you have acquire additional land, terminal construction, reconstruct access roads, tower reconstruction, apron reconstruction, which is the golf ramp, purchase SRE, construct the icing facility. There's a lot of stuff on here that, for all intents and purposes, is projects that are on the wish list of the airport to complete. The reason, in conjunction with the board and New Hampshire DOT, the reason why they're all on here is because if they're not on your CIP, you can never move them up. But because they're on here and you guys have the funds potentially, New Hampshire DOT and the FAA have the funds, you could slide them up into current years if you wanted to, because they're here on the CIP. So that's kind of the intent. You technically have a 5-year CIP. FAA only requires a 3-year, but you guys have a 5-year with New Hampshire DOT. It goes out to 2022 at this point. The projects that are included in that are this groove and seal project, SRE in 18, another $1 million pavement maintenance rehab project in 2019, another SRE purchase in 20, design only for your taxiway alpha relocation in 21, and then the construction of taxiway alpha in 2022, and then out years from there. So,
question.
Eric, just as far as reconstructing the tower building, maybe on with BWC and that whole bankruptcy and all that, any idea what we can do with that building?
When you say that building, you mean the one underneath the tower?
Yeah.
there's a lot of options. I think the master plan is looking at a whole bunch of areas for future development in terms of the tower, the apron, the tower corporate facilities, terminal buildings, SRE buildings. The master plan is getting into that. There's a lot of options. I know that in the past that building has been looked at for everything from airport administration to a static area or a customs facility. There's been a lot of different avenues that have been looked at.
So the land is city land. Yeah. We lease from the city. But the building is Webster's building, except the tax portion, right?
Correct.
So
that's the way I understand it.
I can speak to that. First of all, the proposed project to reconstruct the tower is not to build it where it is now. It's
to build a new tower?
To be determined. Usually when you build a new tower, you look at feasibility and what the best application for it is in terms of visibility, constructability, a whole bunch of things. FAA has a strict criteria or SOP for that.
I was going to talk about the Aviation Center later, but I'll do it now.
Go right ahead.
Okay, I had a meeting today with the provost for the Hellenic American University, who, for those of you who don't know, has educational facilities in Manchester, and they made a decision they want to move to Nashua. They've made arrangements with Nashua Community College. Their first class began a week ago on the 6th. The plan was that the classes would actually be held at Nashua Community College. That's been delayed because of classroom facilities. However, they assured me today that there's absolutely nothing in the way. They are going to be here very quickly and have their classes moved from Manchester to Nashua. This is the group that wants very much to begin and start an aviation program for their university. And with respect to the buildings, the conversation went along this line. They have a bid in to purchase Daniel Webster College, which includes the campus and the Aviation Center. They're all in one. And the trustee of the bankruptcy court informed them that their bid is so low that it's not even being seriously considered. As a result of that, they have taken another look at it, and they pretty much have decided that they are no longer interested in purchasing Daniel Webster College. However, they are very, very interested in purchasing the Aviation Center. And if it were available for sale today, the comment that was made to me today was, they'll be here with their checkbook and they'll pay what they need to pay to get their hands on that building. To use it for their classroom facilities. And he said if we were able to get this 3 months ago, we wouldn't be moving into Nashua Community College, we'd be moving into the Aviation Center. Their plan to start an aviation program is still on track, and they figure that within a year, within the coming year, they will be working aggressively to have an aviation program here at the airport. I don't have any details on that. The provost for the university will be here at our next meeting to brief us all as to where they stand. I made a proposal today. I made it to him first, and I also sent an email to the board that I think it would be beneficial on our part to engage New Hampshire DOT / FAA to encourage the bankruptcy court to divorce the Aviation Center from Daniel Webster campus, because a potential buyer for Daniel Webster campus who may be buying it for condos or for real estate development or office buildings or whatever is really not going to have an interest on the Aviation Center unless they have an aviation interest, which is very unlikely. We also received today notification from Southern New Hampshire that the leases, etc., payments all end on 31 May. So we have to come up with some kind of a plan as to what happens on 1 June. We still have the tower. We rent it from Daniel Webster. We pay the utilities. And if they're going to lock the front door, we have to have some kind of a plan. So my suggestion was we engage New Hampshire DOT / FAA to put a little pressure on the bankruptcy court to say, look, one is apples and the other one is oranges. Separate them and treat them as two separate parcels, and somebody will be in here with a checkbook to buy that Aviation Center right away. I don't know what weight we could influence on the court, but I don't think it would hurt to try.
Alderman Shuttman, do you have any idea about our rights to, since it's on the airport, the city having
eminent domain?
Eminent domain.
I'm not sure. What I understood, though, is that there was somehow that building was already treated somehow separately. Because the issue with the bankruptcy court and the creditor is that, you know, someone lent money based on that being an asset. But from what I understood, somehow that asset that was used as collateral for that loan did not include the building at the base of the tower. So whatever's happening with the bankruptcy is one thing, but what's happening with that one particular creditor, it could be separate. I heard, and he's not here, and he was going to send me an email. I need to follow up with him, the economic development director. I ran into him a few weeks ago, and he said that whoever owns that building has been talking to the city about trying to find somebody to buy it. And he wanted to know if the airport would be interested. I said, well, I think so. And he said he would send me the details, and I haven't heard anything. So as we're having a conversation, I got to follow up with him. But the basic gist of what I get from all that is that somehow there's the bankruptcy because Daniel Webster owned it all, but it may not have been part of whatever was used as collateral for a loan that concerns that one particular creditor. It's only one creditor from what I understand. So I guess we need to figure that out. Because we got to keep the tower going.
Again, the gentleman that I spoke to today indicated that they were in touch with the bankruptcy court on the Aviation Center, and they were told it's parcel and parcel with the campus.
Really? Okay.
So okay. We probably need to reopen that box. Take a look.
Yeah, we do. I'll be in touch with the Economic Development Director, and because someone approached him, and he said to me, "Do you think the airport would be interested?" Because he heard that someone is trying to sell it. He was going to get the information, like I say, a couple weeks ago. I'll follow up with him tomorrow.
Thank you. Wes, if the lease is terminated on June 1, I guess if you wanted to play hardball, you could tell them they have to remove their building.
Just take the bottom part of it.
Yeah, sure.
it's all a negotiation.
They're saying that their lease with us for the other buildings is ending. We haven't told them that we're ending our lease with them because ours goes through to, I don't know, I've got it here. It's 2020. We have a lease with Daniel Webster till 2020.
It doesn't exist anymore.
Well, I think the FAA might have a little bit to say about that. I mean, worst case, we're going to have a lease with the bankruptcy court. We'll send them our dollar. and they cash it.
I think you bring up valid points to send letters to FAA and DOT, and we should have our own letter go to the bankruptcy judge to move things along.
Well, I think what I'll do is I'll call New Hampshire DOT and see what their attitude is on it. They may say, forget it, FAA wouldn't help you at all, then why do it? I mean, but we could certainly approach the bankruptcy.
Let's ask the lawyer.
Shane.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. remember, you're all probably well aware of this, but the trustee in bankruptcy has the unfettered discretion to abrogate any contracts that are existing, including leases with whomever they might be, or for example, any of the credit commitments that Daniel Webster College may have. By the same token, you, as a separate governmental entity, do, I'm not sure this is necessarily recommended, but you do have the ability to reach out to the trustee or one of the trustee's clerks to open the door from a conversational standpoint, and that's actually done fairly regularly, where you could have an outreach. You could actually place a call to say the trustee's clerk and indicate an interest and ask or make the inquiry if we actually are interested in, whether it's for us or for it's another institution, what steps might be followed to that extent. So to some extent, on the lowest level, informal inquiry occurs regularly.
And you follow that up, of course, with in writing with whatever you, it is that you intend to undertake.
It's good to know.
My point is they tend to be quite forthcoming about the status of the matter, particularly when it's such a large bankruptcy like this, and you might be in a position to find out information. Just a thought.
So, Bob, maybe you and I can facilitate a call to the clerk.
Okay. And Alderman Schoen, if you'd have that, we can close the loop on that.
Sure, I will do that. I'll let you know.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Teamwork.
Okay.
I'm done.
You're done.
Gail is done.
You have to say something.
Okay, let's move on to committees. Strategic Planning Committee.
Yes.
We've been busy with other okay. things too, but the committee did meet last
week. We did. I brought a visual aid. Show and tell. So, our big mission last time we met was we wanted to come up with at least what we felt was an appropriate, pithy, yet descriptive vision for the airport. And I say vision because we kicked around, we being Tim Roseblow and Alderman Schoen here, the idea of the word mission, vision, you know, what is it, you know, mission versus vision. We really felt missions are good, but we really need to have a vision. We really need to have a broader view of things and not just sort of a tactical view on what are we doing this year, next year. We're doing that already. We're already working that. We're going to be doing that more detail here with Director Woods with the master plan. What's our vision? Who are we? Where are we going? How are we going to, you know, and then how are we going to get there? So, together, we came up with that.
I'll get out of the way.
On the two boats.
So, notice that we use the term boring, blah, however you want to say it, because we wanted to really say, okay, National Airport, it was kind of funny, we were talking about, what is this place really called? Is it the National Airport? Not really. It's not really. It's become that, but that's really its name. And we wanted to not lose that idea that it's really Boyd Field, right? That talks about its roots. It talks about where it came from. So we really wanted to keep it. Can we have to stand up on its own?
No,
I was wondering if you'll stand up on its own.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so everybody can read, but I'll go through it anyway. To be the first choice airport in the region, we thought, yep, because we want to be more than just the state. We are a region. New England's a region, obviously. That's how we all define ourselves as New Englanders. For general aviation pilots, our bread and butter, right, this is where we came from. This is who our large client base is. Attracting businesses, because we want to advance, right? We want to bring in, sort of give a nod to more of that corporate customer, bring in some revenue generation, and fostering a culture of education, not just the Daniel Webster type education, but the one-man flight instructor, the larger FBOs that are training students, all that kind of stuff. And then most importantly, I think at the end, an enthusiasm for aviation, right? Because that's the key element that everybody in aviation shares. It's an enthusiasm, right? We don't have an enthusiasm for lots of things in life, but everybody who's involved with aviation at any degree, any level, is there because they have enthusiasm about it. Especially the people that are doing it all the time. It's not easy to learn how to fly. It's not cheap. It's not all those things. So there's a commitment, there's an enthusiasm for aviation that we feel is an important thing to express in our vision statement. So, not a lot of words. It's actually one run-on sentence, I guess you could say. But we felt that was a good first pass of trying to capture what we felt were the essential elements of who we are, where we came from, but where we want to go, and the things that we want to emphasize going forward. So on that, I'll kind of just open it up for a brief little discussion, I guess.
Comments?
Any comments?
Steve.
I mean, I like the idea of having Bloor Airport. Boyd Field in there, but it definitely changes the identity of our airport as far as what people know. Like, we don't call Keene really Gillian Hopkins, sure. Keene Memorial, all these other places. We don't call them that. We call them Nashua. Having said that, though, Nashua Airport at Boyd Field,
Right. And we did talk about that, kind of blending those two together ultimately.
So long, but still it does maintain the history of the airfield, no doubt about that.
Right.
I love the fact that the fact that you have the two together, because everybody's always forgetting about that. To me, that's the whole, that's the engine that makes it work. Without enthusiasm, nothing works.
You've never met a person that said, I got dragged into the airplane and I was taught to fly. Never, ever, ever, ever in the history of the world will you ever find that person.
All right.
Right.
I do have a quick, Rick Bartles here, and Rick and I talked not too long ago about, enthusiasm and what do we want and what do we need and mean, and Rick talked, gave me a lot of ideas. So hopefully soon, Rick and Bob, I don't know if you guys have touched base yet, but Bob, before we made him the interim manager, was pretty much in charge of marketing and things like that. So hopefully you guys will get to talk, or maybe at the next meeting we can ask Rick to give a presentation on some ideas he has about promoting the airport and coming up with some
Wes, I'll applaud your managing to boil it down to 25 words or less. The current mission statement on the website is horrible. And there's a whole bunch of corporate mission statements that go on and on and on, and you know what? They say nothing.
Well, we also
and we looked at a lot of those.
Yeah. And we actually thought one of the discussions we had when we're sitting there trying to grind through this thing was a lot of those things should be implied, right? Good stewards of the environment, compliance with regulations. Duh, right? We should be doing that. We have to say that. And a lot of those things at one time were differentiators for everybody, but now it's sort of a given, right? There's a standard that everybody should be practicing at. So, and agreed, it just doesn't do very well. It's just sort of, great, it's an insurance letter.
Over the shoulder.
And thanks. I just want to add on to what Joe just said here. This process was very interesting because we sort of wrestled with those questions. Who are we? Where do we come from? Where do we want to go? And a lot of the things that we looked at didn't capture any imagination at all. They were really, there was nothing there. But when we came up with this one, and there was a lot of, trading in words and trading out words and even commas, and all that kind of stuff. But in the end, when we left that night, it seemed that whatever we had sort of clicked. And I thought about this in the intervening weeks, I guess. And It does kind of capture the imagination of Barfield. You should do some research on how that name's really pronounced, because if that's going to be our name, you should know it. I think including Nashua in some way is important, because we call Nashua Tower and all that sort of stuff. But the identity of a field as opposed to an airport that has a name after somebody kind of captures the barnstorming history of the airport, which I think is something we don't ever want to lose. I think someone who's flying a G5 can still identify with that as much as the guy flying a Piper Cub. And we're general aviation, not commercial aviation. We don't want to have scheduled carriers here and TSA and all that sort of stuff. That's a big part of our identity. And the idea of attracting businesses, it's about developing Nashua as a business center. And using the airport to bring businesses in, not just because they have airplanes, and then sell aviation services, but because they sell whatever and use airplanes in the conduct of their business. And the education enthusiasm, of course, too, we've touched on those. But in the end, with 25 words, I'll trust Wes's word count on that. I didn't count on myself.
The guy covered the wall. Yeah. They kept that wall, David. I would have been in trouble.
25.
It does kind of capture that, and when we left there, I felt that we had something that was memorable enough and captured imagination, for lack of a better description. So I hope that people think about it over the next few weeks or whatever, and as they weigh in on it, think of what it does. What does it stir? Does it stir anything? And hopefully, it stirs something good that is all part of that cultural.
Shane.
I think it's a great mission statement and vision statement. and I applaud as well your efforts to draw this up. Very encouraging to see you do this. I like the language very much. I think it's great. I think it's great.
David thought it looked great in the back of the T-shirt with the United States.
Well, if you take the first, three words off and put it on a T-shirt.
Yeah, first choice airport in the region.
Right.
The Jeopardy question. That's the answer.
should we digest this over the next month? And then vote on it, or do we want to vote on it?
Maybe you want to pop it up on the website, maybe, and just get the feedback?
You guys can go out on a limb and vote on it, right?
I wonder about replacing pilots with. There's a whole lot of people here. There's mechanics here. There's a lot of people here that.
Name a mechanic.
Yeah. that are involved in general aviation that maybe aren't necessarily.
You're a pilot.
I am, but.
You're a business.
I'm just throwing it out.
We actually talked about that.
Maybe that seems a little not discriminatory, but there's people that
have
dropped
the word pilot.
Just
general
aviation.
The background, actually, it's funny you say it, because the background behind that word is, and I think David, you brought this up, is that who is coming to this airport, right? Because obviously we want to attract people to the airport. Who makes the decision, for the most part, to come to the airport? Pilot, right? I get your point, believe me. You could maybe see something like general aviation.
And restaurants.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of people that come to the restaurants.
But they fly
general aviation.
All right,
so that might be one modification.
Right? I don't know. I was just thinking out loud.
Well, you know what we could do? We could try this on for a little bit. And if we decide we need to make a change, we can make a change. This is not, we're not putting this into some kind of cement and putting a monument out in front of it,
Yeah.
I'll have to call the monument company.
How about switching to tracking?
Stop it now.
Hey, Graven and Grant, put it on the corner of Sharon Ave.
Generally, I'm just checking pilot businesses. Switching those two words?
Yeah. Attracting general aviation pilots?
No, for general aviation.
Attracting pilots.
Business. Make a motion.
But we're not attracting, because there's a different word in there, fostering. We got people coming, that's what the pilots are. Then we're attracting business and fostering, so you got the two verbs there. You said attracting pilots and businesses and fostering. It starts to get a little run on.
Yeah, somebody make a motion.
I'm going to make a motion that we adopt these words as they are. If there's, if people ultimately feel that there should be some modification, we can have another motion at some point in the future. This is not set in stone.
Yes, let's go.
But I think this is a great place to start.
Is there a second to the motion?
Okay.
80 seconds. Discussion. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much.
On the website.
Put a big stamp on it.
So we're finished with committees. Are there any other committees that need to report? Okay, old business, perimeter place investments. That's an old one. And the CrossFit is new business. And we're at a point where people are starting to want to negotiate new leases, and I think we need to develop a lease policy as to, or have some direction as to what we want to do with regards to responding to these two requests that are out there. Does anyone have any suggestions?
Are these the, are they under the value lease extension that was signed in 2004, 2007, or that? Are they under the automatic extension with terms to be negotiated?
I don't know offhand. I think that they're probably not. If I recall the gentleman, he said they would like to sell the building and they only had 8 years ago or something like that, and a potential buyer would be interested in not knowing what goes beyond.
Shouldn't a new buyer negotiate a new lease? I mean, they can buy the existing lease.
What he was saying was it's not attractive if,
right.
if it's going to expire.
A new lease.
Well, I would say buy the lease, you know, buy the existing lease, and the new buyer can come to us.
But the new buyer will have an uncertainty, then
they
can't
resolve
that before they buy the building.
Before he gets a new lease.
I believe he was saying that the bank was giving him an issue about the lease not being long enough, so he wasn't able to get the funding without a lease extension.
Right. Okay. Yeah, we did talk about that.
That was before we got the extension from the city.
Correct. So we did get the extension from the city.
Right.
And now we're at a point where we could adopt a new lease. But we need to know.
I think we need a lease renewal committee to receive these requests. We now have two.
Right.
And address them and make a recommendation to the board.
Do we need a committee though? I don't think we need a committee. Talk to our lawyer and
talk. Well, I mean, is there a hard request, like we want to extend our lease for 20 years or something like that? I mean, do we have this hard request?
Let me give you an example.
Yeah, sure.
The one from the chamber, CrossFit, they came in, their language is a little bit questionable. They came in and said, we want to buy this building, but we don't want to buy it if the lease is going to expire in 2024. We want a 20 to 30 year extension with the same lease conditions, same rates.
So basically, it's about standardization of the leasing terms. We've got all sorts of.
Yeah. So, I don't think we're going to give them 20 years.
So, we need to work on it.
I'd like to offer, I don't know if you've been by that building when they've been active. The good news is they appear to be very successful. Bad news is they overfill the parking by a factor of 3x. They're up and down the street. They run some kind of events where people are running up and down the street. And I would argue that all of that should be taken into account when you think about your negotiation with that business. It's not a city street, it's an airport-owned street, and it's not a high traffic area, but in some way, shape, or form, you know, we would prefer that the activity, the business, fit within the footprint of their facility. So, for instance, you might consider that they have to lease more real estate in some way, shape, or form if they can't fit all of their customers into their existing property.
If I may. I went over there and talked with them 5 years ago. I'm not really sure when it was, but the day that we had the very big snow, and they were parking on Perimeter Road. And I went over and reminded them that it's a $350 fine if the plows can't get through. And I asked them to please put something on their door telling the people not to park on Perimeter Road, particularly when the plows are out there, because the plows were going around them. And that was it. Several months ago, they approached us with leasing more parking spaces in some of the area in front of our building 93. And that didn't really go anywhere. So they're open to the discussion to do that. But there is no room over there to expand their parking lot. I mean, if they have an event going on, they're going to overflow that parking lot.
It appears that regular business overflows their parking lot.
Yeah, they do. They park over at the store, and they park at Midfield.
I was going to say, for fear of overextending the board and their duties, what I'd like to suggest is that interim airport manager Scheifel and myself and our attorney work up a lease policy and leases for these two requests that I hear.
Just for these two requests, or for the future?
Well, starting off with these two requests.
She's in the Supreme Court of Development Policy.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, we had these two snowstorms recently, and we talked about, you know, you mentioned the vehicles being in the way and plowing. I presume that those leases on those buildings include some kind of charge for snow removal. Like
They do their own.
They do their own, but they don't do perimeter road. We have an issue with perimeter road. And I wonder, as you're talking with them, maybe something can be, some kind of charge can be added there, if it's not there already, to cover some of the cost of a perimeter road. We also have to think about paving perimeter road someday. That's our street. And can we get any funding for paving an access road?
No.
Generally speaking?
Yes. As long as it's it rates high enough. It was constructed with AIP funds previously.
Okay. But we do have to think about recovering some money to fund that. But if it can be done with funds that we have a match for, some of the federal funds, I suppose that's one thing. But
it's on the CIP as an out year to rehabilitate perimeter road.
Okay. Okay, well, whatever we do for those businesses out there, especially since they have customers coming in, it's not just airport tenants, you know, it's just they have the public coming in. Maybe you can see if there's not something in there already about plowing perimeter road, not just their own parking lot, which I know they take care of that, but to share in the expense of plowing perimeter road, and maybe something that would help fund pavement ultimately, too.
Do we know that we'll take that into consideration? The
challenge with that is, of course, we all use perimeter road. It's access to the airport. That said, at the risk of stirring up an old discussion, the businesses outside the fence are regular commercial businesses. And I would argue that everyone inside the fence has to deal with the fence and getting in and out, and that changes the value of that real estate. But the businesses along perimeter road are real commercial establishments that you can make a very reasonable argument should be a lease extension. You should look at the rates being real commercial rates comparable to the rest of the city. I don't believe that's the case right now.
I can add one other comment too, if I may.
Yes.
There's a lot of construction going on Sharon Ave, where it meets up with Amherst Street, you know, the jug handles and all that. That's not all city funds. Some of the businesses, they're contributing a significant portion. I think it's $300,000 to $500,000. You know what it is, John? $500,000 maybe?
Oh, yeah.
Towards that construction. So those private businesses are contributing towards the public construction of that. And I think that these private businesses here, and as much as they do use the road for customer access, just like these guys, Pep Boys, do down here, Sharon and Amherst Street, you know, the argument could be made that they would be responsible for some of that.
Well, a lot of those leases, this one in particular does come up, but they're probably not, they're in the out years. But for the record, perimeter road belongs to the airport, not the city. And the city, through their good graces, plows it for us. We don't plow it.
Oh, I thought we plowed that.
No, we do not. No, we don't have the equipment to do that.
Oh.
We would need two additional plows just to do that.
I thought we plowed it.
So yeah.
We can bill them for it anyhow.
Right? Now you're talking.
You should be an alderman.
It's a really good deal that we have, you know. God help us if they tell us that they're not going to do it. We're in trouble.
Well, they didn't used to do it. They just started doing it.
Yeah. So they're doing it for us.
Moving on.
Okay, moving on. We have House Bill 124 update. I don't know if anyone can more update what I know, and that is that the House bill has had passed the Transportation Committee by a vote of, I believe, 15-3, and it then goes to vote by the entire House. And last I knew, that was not on the consent agenda.
No, that was on the consent agenda, and it passed by voice vote through the House. It now goes to the Ways and Means Committee, and the next meeting is next Thursday, the 23rd. Yes. Sandy, what time was that?
11 a.m. Thursday, the 23rd at 11 a.m.
Okay. If anyone is coming to testify on that, the fact that it's scheduled for 11 a.m. is meaningless, because they'll start committee meetings as early as 9:30, and if a committee meeting runs over, then obviously that starting time is going to run over. So if you're coming to testify, plan on being there a while. You're not going to just walk in, testify, and walk back out. What we need is some numbers. We need numbers, and because this is a money committee that it's going to. That's all they do is deal with money. The first thing they're going to ask is, what are you going to do to replace this revenue? They want numbers. So you're going to have, we had talked to some extent about a fuel tax increase of a couple of cents. You have to have a formula that's going to tell them how much that tax, how much you project that tax to bring in as compared to what the repeal of the millage is going to lose. So you've got to have some concrete facts there. Wes has a...
I understand that they repealed everything, not just the millage.
What happened is when I first filed the bill, the attorney that crafted the bill wanted to repeal everything. The six... slots for millage plus the registration fee. He said that was the only way he could craft it. David and I talked about it, Shane, we talked about it, and we decided to put in an amendment and only remove the millage and leave the registration. The chairman of the committee, Transportation Committee, has the option of whether he wants to accept that amendment or not. He chose not to because he told me he felt that his committee would not pass the bill in that state as it was amended. So he went back to the original bill and got it passed through his committee, which was the ultimate goal, to get it through that committee to move on to the next part of the process. So by not accepting the amendment, he feels that's how he got it passed on the 15-3 vote. That was his option. So as it stands now, we're back to the original bill, which repeals everything.
So what do you need?
You know,
that's more money we have to talk about making up.
That's possible. You can also, at the time, in Ways and Means next week, you can offer an amendment at that time and say, what if we decide not to remove the final registration fee but only the millage? And at that point, the chairman of that committee can accept that amendment. But that's an option that the chairman of the committee has.
Who's the chairman of that committee?
Pat Abrami.
Wes, and then I have a question.
So I did a spreadsheet that addresses that. I think Dave and some of the other folks have a copy of that.
Yeah, Wes had some good numbers with him.
And I was just going to comment that to your point, just knocking out the millage, you need to make up about $600,000.
Right.
Knock out everything, you got to make up $900,000. So my spreadsheet shows how many cents increase in the tax on jet fuel you have to do that. And obviously, it's easier to make up $600,000 than $900,000.
But that's what you need is something, some concrete figures that show how you're going to make up the difference. Mm-hmm. Because it's a money bill, and only the House can institute a money bill. The Senate likes to say they're the upper chamber. That's bull. Because they can't handle money. Only the House can handle money. And this is a money bill, so they're going to want those facts and figures.
Shane, do you have any spreadsheet figures in addition to what Wes has provided?
We've been operating off from Wes's figures. Wes has done an extraordinary amount of research on the background on this, and it's been very, very helpful for us, and that's what our group has been working under. And I should just offer to you just a couple of points, if I may. First, I want to thank the board for your support. We may not have gotten this far without your collective support on this matter. It's been very significant. I have to confess, and perhaps offer an apology, I didn't realize that we were at the stage we are now with respect to the fact that it was voted out of transportation in its original form and not as we had hoped to amend. The philosophy behind the amendment, as you're aware, which simply was to remove the millage portion, leaving intact what we call notionally the tonnage, as well as the per capita, which I think is $48 on airplane notionally. The philosophy behind that was a much more palatable bill for to get passed, and that it would be an easier sell. That the money hit to the state would be less, yet it would still be receiving some funds. My actual comment, Mr. Chairman, would be perhaps a question to Representative LeBrun about what the strategy might be from here. We have a working group, before I can get to that, we have a working group, as I think you're aware, by the way, members of the Airport Authority are welcome to participate or sit in or listen. We have not met within the last 4 or 5 days. That group consists of myself, Greg. It's informal. Greg Leeson, Paul Taylor, Ned Denny from Fort City Air, and a number of other individuals who've attended our formational meeting. We had to form, so you're aware, we had to form an association and call ourselves that. We're not an LLC as such, we're just an association, which is permitted under New Hampshire law. We don't have any formation documents. And I believe we're called, I was telephoning in, the New Hampshire Business Aircraft Association, or Business Aviation Association. Greg Leeson is the president, only because he didn't duck when everybody pointed his way. We have hired, but this is an important point, we've hired a lobbyist, and that's David Collins from Rath, Young, and Pignatelli. I think you're aware of that. And a number of us, including National Jet, Infinity, Port City Air, and others, have agreed to contribute and have towards the funding this effort. The lobbyist is very helpful. It's Attorney David Collins. I think what I'd like to do in terms of my comments, I know I haven't really answered your question perhaps. If you have more, I'll try to, but my next comment would be to ask Representative LeBrun, what is the next strategy step, if you will, and should we be considering trying to get an amendment through Ways and Means or trying to pass the bill as originally drafted through Ways and Means? I confess I'm a little bit of a fish out of water on this.
The bill has to be presented. I'll be presenting the bill as it stands, which it would be repealing all the millage plus the registration fees. That's the way we have to begin. As the questioning goes on, we can introduce an amendment and ask the committee if they would accept an amendment to the original bill by removing that registration fee and going back to the repealing of the millage.
And is that during the hearing?
Yes.
So during the hearing itself, an amendment can be submitted?
It can be submitted, and what would happen is I would have to take the amendment and take it back to the attorney, have them drafted it anew, which they can do within an hour or so. So you're not going to lose any time. They'll redraft it. I'll bring it back to the committee, and then the committee will go from there with the amendment.
What do you recommend we do at this juncture?
You know, after we filed the original bill, the attorneys just felt that the way they crafted the original bill was the only way they could do it and get it passed. That was their opinion. David and yourself and a couple others thought that was going too far and we should take the registration part out of the bill. That didn't work because the chairman didn't accept the amendment. He would only accept the original bill. But now we're starting all over again. This is a totally new process. This is as though this is the initial hearing. And so nothing has happened before here. Yeah. So we're back to square one. We'll start with the original bill, and we can amend from there.
Representative LeBron, I have a question for you. I'm probably stepping four steps ahead. Do we know how the governor feels about the whole concept?
I've got a call in to the governor. I'm asking for 15 minutes of his time to talk to him about it. I haven't heard back from his office yet.
I can answer that question. I think the impression that I had, what I heard, was that he was in favor of it because he wants to get rid of barriers to entry. That's a big part of what he's intending to do. Now, whether he would have an opinion on just getting rid of the millage or getting rid of fees altogether is a question I can't necessarily answer. But a question that I have is for Don. What do you think, I mean, for this to go through the Transportation Committee and go through better with a complete repeal of registration fees is surprising to me. Do you think that Ways and Means would likely just say, yep, let's just give, do we have to make it up to get it through Ways and Means? Do we have to make it the revenue? Or are they likely to say, you know what, it's not that much money, we'll figure it out?
Ways and Means is not going to say it's not that much money. If it was only 50 cents, Ways and Means.
What's DOT's annual budget? What does this represent as a percentage of DOT's budget?
Probably.
I think I read somewhere that DOT's annual budget was like $140 million.
Something like that. $140 to $155 million.
Less than $1 million.
Yeah. So it's a small portion of their budget.
Very small.
Well, that was my question. DOT and Granite City Airport managers are definitely against this reform. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd like to reach out to them and sit and maybe hash things out a little more. I know next week is kind of soon, but
they do have a meeting on Friday.
The legislative has a meeting on Friday.
I don't know that they're necessarily against it, but against canceling everything altogether,
right.
You know,
right.
Coming up with another way to provide funding, because you have the Bureau of Aeronautics, which would go away in that 5%,
right.
You know, project that's kind of important for airports across the state, you know,
right.
To get projects done.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's necessarily that they want to just, they're against getting rid of the millage, it's getting rid of it without having another way to replace those funds.
Yeah, I'd like to, you know, work together with them and, you know, in my opinion, we're all in it together.
Well, it's always easier to put something back in than just to take something out. So with having the original bill, you have that option of saying, okay, this is too much money, you want to cut it back a little bit, then let's continue with the registration and only take out the millage. That's where your amendment begins.
I'd like to point out one thing. For folks who don't understand the way dollars go in and out of state government, when you write a check to register your airplane, you do not write it to DOT. You write it to Treasurer's State of New Hampshire. If all the money goes to the state, the general fund, and then DOT every year, or every 2 years, I guess, goes and does what every state agency does. They present their budget, and they beg for money. So changing the registration fee will not change any of that process. They are not guaranteed a portion of the registration fee. In fact, by law, by statute, a portion of that registration fee has to go back to the airports. the legislature gets to decide what happens to all the rest. So it's not going to change the process by which money goes to airports. The legislature can say, we're going to set aside this much money as matching funds for airports. That won't change.
Ask one more question. Would a tax change on Jet A fuel, for instance, be amended into this bill, or would that have to be separate legislation?
No, that could be amended.
Okay. All right. What's the composition of this committee? 25 members again?
No. This one is 20 members, I believe. 20 or 21.
Okay. Any from the Nashua delegation on this committee?
Two. Bill Holm and Jordan Ullery. Jordan Ullery.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks.
And I might add that those two are dead set against this, and nothing is going to change their mind. I've been trying for 2 months now to talk to them and change their mind. Nothing is going to change their mind. So you're going to go in with two votes against it.
Why? What's their rationale?
I'm sorry?
Why are they setting that way?
Because they get tunnel vision. All they see is the revenue that's going to be lost. And like I said, this is a money committee, and that's all they care about. And they see that there's a loss of money. They're not looking at any possible way that you can replace that loss. All they see is that initial loss.
Maybe a phone call from the mayor?
Would their minds be changed if they saw the additional revenue coming back in?
Possibly. But right now, I would say they're 100% against it.
Would it help if the community lobbied these two folks?
The lobbyist that Shane mentioned, it's a possibility that he could sit down with them and talk to them.
Well, Mr. Chairman? If I read your question correctly, I'm wondering whether outreach by members of our community,
yeah,
right, towards, mm-hmm, there are representatives from Nashua. Any thoughts on reaching out to them directly, whether any number of us were to call?
I don't see or a member, heard anything.
The chairman of the airport authority, for mm-hmm example.
Yeah. I think that might be a good idea.
Are we aware of any other opposition on the committee as well besides these two?
No, not any of them that are standing out as being opposed to it.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask one more follow-up question? Can you help with it? One issue I have on this that I found difficult is that the fundamental policy issues that are involved in this, insofar as the size of the millage, notwithstanding the other parts of the fee, as Wes has pointed out, the large aircraft amounts to 1,000 times the fee that's paid in Nass, is a very significant differential with our competitor to the south. Is it naive to assume that that will have any significance with the committee members at the hearing?
It will. Like I said, this is going to start the process all over again. So transportation heard all of this. That doesn't matter anymore. This is a new committee. They haven't heard any of this. So everything you can tell them starting anew is beneficial. So the same testimony that was given at transportation should be given at this Ways and Means Committee.
Do you feel it's fait accompli that if there is no method offered to make up the difference that the bill is dead?
I would say it is, yes.
Do you have a sense for whether, and I'm wondering perhaps any of the folks in the room may be connected to Casava and they have some comment. Do you have a sense for whether if we were to offer, for example, a couple of cents on a jet fuel, for example, big issue there, whether or not we include the airlines. They receive a preferential rate under New Hampshire law that's quite a bit less. Do you have a feel for whether or not that might, what effect that might have on the committee?
I think it would have a big effect on the committee, because that's what they're looking for, is what you're going to replace this revenue with. They're not going to go for just eliminating this revenue source with nothing to replace it. It's dead on arrival if you go in with that attitude.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I can try to bring this discussion to a close.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you all for your
Mr. Chairman, if I may say one more thing.
Sure.
Anybody who's coming to testify, like I say, come in with the numbers, but anyone who's coming there that has no intention of testifying, there's a blue sheet for every bill that comes into that committee. Sign that blue sheet, because at the end of the committee hearing, the chairman reads that blue sheet and he reads how many people were pro and how many were con that did not speak. And that has an influence on the committee, because that adds weight to the conversation before they take their vote, before they eject the bill.
Thank you, Representative Brown. Next item on the old business is a chamber event.
There was a chamber event scheduled to be held here at the airport. It was a lot more than we had realized at the time. We spoke to the chamber and they have agreed to postpone it. They're going to cancel it for now, postpone it maybe at a later date when we have a new manager. We can do a meet and greet, have some of the businesses involved, and do some networking with the chamber. And the chamber does do some great things. At this time, it was a cost that we didn't feel like we could expend, and we are getting our money back from the caterer. So they'll be sending a check.
Okay. Thank you. New business, the airport manager position. Has been advertised, and we are currently getting resumes in. The board will be starting a process of interviewing those individuals. We're going to talk about the schedule per se and how we can accomplish that. Anyone have any thoughts?
You guys shut it down. So.
Well, we do want to interview. In my opinion, I would like to interview. We have about 13 resumes.
12 and a half.
12 and a half resumes right now. I think they've shown them as the half. No. 13 resumes. And I, you know, I would like to speak to each person who has applied. We have, you know, clearly all five of us sitting in front of everybody might not work. I want to start doing it this week, so I do not want to do it at 9 at night, but that was a good idea, Bob. But I think, you know, maybe two or three of us at a time and swap off, or I don't know. What do you want to do?
How that is all working. We'll look at calendars.
We can figure that out.
We don't have to hash that out.
Just for everybody's edification, we have we have 8 from the New Nashua, Hudson, Merrimack area, 1 from New York, 2 from Massachusetts, 1 from Rhode Island, and 1 from Wisconsin.
I do know the applicant from Rhode Island can come on Thursday. That's the only thing that's available next week.
I don't think we're going to make the guy from Wisconsin fly out here. So, you know, I would suggest a phone screen for him.
All right, moving along. So we'll come up with a schedule between us and Bob. We'll contact the applicants accordingly. Okay. Public input. Steve.
I just want to publicly commend you guys for what is a long, seemingly drawn-out, aggravating, endless, but to me, I've always seen that Alpha Ramp as being the picture window of the whole airport. My chair, if you will. I mean, just mine, ours. And you guys went the extra mile, used your imagination, you pushed through it, you found an alternate solution that we never even knew existed. I don't know who's responsible for it, but as far as I'm concerned, you all are just hanging in there. Showed me a lot of resiliency, and I'm impressed. And I thank you very much for that.
Very welcome.
Time for something totally off topic.
Sure.
Kevin Plant, for the record, besides being a pilot based here, I'm also an air traffic controller with Boston Approach. And just in order to bring awareness, I don't know how much is out there. We're not doing a very good job of public outreach right now. But I'm representing the TRACON for the VOR decommissioning project that's going on nationally. So locally, the impact is the Manchester VOR is being decommissioned, Lawrence VOR is being decommissioned, Pease is going away, Keene's going away, a bunch of others. So anything associated with those is going to be going away also. So here in Nashua, a lot of the procedures are going to have to be modified. Fixed definitions for the ILS, for example, that should be no big deal. The bigger deal is the VOR Alpha is going to be going away, as well as the VOR to runway 32, just because there's no way you can have those and have the VORs go away. So if you guys have any questions about that, I can try and help you out.
We have some FARs in Part 91 that refer to airways.
Yep.
Are the, like Victor 106, all those airways,
of course,
will still be going to the same place to reference by RNAV GPS or something? Or
so,
will they be decommissioning the airways?
Any airways that are associated with a VOR will go away. You can't have a Victor airway unless there's the VORs. Those are defined federally, you know, by radials off of VORs. In the past, some VORs that have gone away have the Victor airways have been replaced by T-routes, which are RNAV definitions. A lot of the Victor airways around here won't necessarily be replaced by T-routes. When we first started doing this, they went a little crazy with just doing one-for-one replacements with T-routes with Victor Airways. There are international treaties that limit how many T-routes we can have in the U.S.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
So, because of that, I can tell you confidently that most of the airways, at least in the New England area, if they're going to go away, they won't necessarily be replaced by a T-route.
Very interesting. Because the regulatory impact, the regulations are they talk about what are essentially Victor Airways.
Well, the bonus is if you happen to know anybody that flies, say, aerobatics.
Which is what we do.
Yes.
The implications of being able to do aerobatics underneath federal airway, there are fewer federal airways, you'll have more places to do aerobatics.
I had heard that there was a possibility the VOR Alpha was going down. Now you're saying both the VOR Alpha and the VOR 32 are going.
So
we already lost the NDB.
So a few years back, there was an effort to reduce the number of conventional procedures in the system that the FAA thought were superfluous. And the VOR Alpha is one that was on the chopping block a couple different times for that effort. It successfully has survived, and we fly up to Maine quite a bit out of here, and when IFR, if it's not low coming back in, it sure is convenient, straight shot coming back in on the VOR Alpha. So personally, being a pilot based here, I'm all about keeping it there.
Well, I can tell you, I mean, we've lost the NDB. You're saying we're going to lose the VOR Alpha and the VOR 32.
Correct.
That, other than those that have GPS that are actually usable for approaches, that only leaves the ILS.
Correct.
I suppose the localizer, as a part of the ILS.
Correct.
That's going to affect our airport big time.
It's not going to affect you guys or us here at Nashua nearly as much as those that say Stowe, for example. Stowe has a VOR DME 21 and an RNAV to runway 21. The VOR DME is on. Yep.
No, that's a heck of a lot fewer operations down there. Come on.
Oh, no, it's not. Oh, it's a busy place.
Well, that's
a busy
place.
That's, well, the number of operations is here nor there. That airport is going to no longer be accessible by conventional means after Manchester Bureau goes away.
Well,
mm-hmm.
Well,
nothing we can do to change that? To
is this set in stone? In time frame?
So, I am not in a position to affect which VORs are being shut down as much as I tried to when we had the kickoff meeting. The argument that I was making is that historically, when they were looking at superfluous approaches, they wouldn't take any away that would leave an airport only with RNAV approaches. With the VOR minimum operating hour project, that is no longer the concept that the FAA is going with.
Well, you know that if we just have the ILS for those that don't have the approach usable GPSs,
yep.
That's one runway. And the predominant winds here in Nashua are favoring 3-2.
Yes.
So unless we put another ILS in there, that's going to diminish our operations for those that don't have that type of GPS.
So I agree with you. There's no part of me that is disagreeing with you in any way. All I can say is that as a rep from the TRACON, we're told these VORs are going away from higher levels above us. We're told these VORs are going away, and our job is to figure out how to mitigate it going away and then the nuts and bolts of actually getting rid of everything.
Well, you personally have said that you're on board with, if there was any way to make it happen, what would you suggest since you're closer to it than the rest of us?
Well, honestly, I don't have any idea because, you know, when you talk about conventional procedures, there's not a budget in the VOR decommissioning project to add ILSs. So that's totally outside the scope of the project.
That leaves the VORs. And we're just trying to figure out what's the cost of the VOR, really. And flight check, I suppose, has to check from time
to time. Specifically, the Manchester VOR is actually in an apple orchard, and they lease like a ton of acreage. So the lease on for that VOR is ridiculously expensive. So that's one of the reasons I know that VOR specifically is on the chopping block is, and I think the majority of VORs are not actually on airport property, they're on lease agreements off property, and those leases are
so, I mean, if you just say something is ridiculous, it's not ridiculous until you have the number on the table, then you see if it is or isn't. What is the
I don't know the number off the top of my head, I just know.
I don't have those numbers either. That's something.
Look at the other side. Okay. An instrument student doesn't have to hold an NDV anymore.
An instrument student won't have to try
you
to
know what, man, you made him a better pilot.
So all you have to do is plug it into the box of the panel and shoot the precision approach following the cues.
Is there any way the FAA would move the Manchester VOR to our airport?
That's outside the scope of what I could influence. But that's a good question. I kind of doubt that there's enough real estate here to do that. But that would be outside of the ATC side of it.
I mean, there's the threat of losing that income from that land would I think motivate them to maybe make it a little less ridiculous as far as the amount that they're charging.
A lot of it's maintenance too. The Lawrence VOR right now has been down for maintenance for some time. I talked to the tech that was working on it the other day, and it's not like they've identified what's wrong with it, and it's about to be fixed. They've worn parts. So,
constantly.
You know, there's
a lot of the gear is really old.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Sandy Point was just completely redone. That one's not going away anytime soon, but they spent some ridiculous amount of money to get the Sandy Point VOR to the point where it is now. But they have a lot of issues with a lot of VORs. I guess Carmel, for an example. I'm sorry?
I read somewhere that
yes.
They're still to have vacuum tubes.
Right.
Not transistors.
No, it doesn't affect us here, but the Carmel VOR out in New York is another one that's getting moved up on the schedule. Right now, it's published as the majority of radials on the VOR aren't usable. So there's a handful of radials that are usable on the VOR for a number of different reasons. And so there's just a lot of a lot of issues with the VORs, and it's incredibly expensive for them to maintain them and have them actually be useful.
Well, just to finish up here, what was the time frame that they had given you guys to?
So we're talking years out. The first of the ones around here is Keene, and that's in 2020, and then the other ones are a few years after that. We don't have hard dates for the dates of the VORs will actually be shut off. And then the issue with shutting the VORs off is that everything associated with the VOR needs to be not referred to in the charts at all before a VOR can be shut off. So you look at charting cycles, sectional charts are a lot longer than, say, approach plates, but there's a whole lot of different things that have to be modified before a VOR can be shut off. So you'll see smaller changes, say, fixed definitions on the ILS to 1.4. I imagine we would get to that before we would get to completely removing an approach from the system.
So it wouldn't be like marker beacons, it would be probably DPS
systems. Right. Right. And, you know, and with some of them, we could look at defining it as DME, if an ILS is DME equipped, as opposed to a GPS fix. Some of them we're going to lose the in-route tie-ins. They'll be published as radar required.
Well, thank you for that update, although it's not really the news we wanted to hear. But
we'll
deal with it, I guess.
Not that guy.
Okay, I'll move on to any director's comments. Director Scheifel.
Yeah, I have a request from somebody that's looking to rent or buy a hangar. If anybody wants to raise their hand, I'll give you the card. Gentleman is looking to buy for an RV-7.
So people that have hangars available for rent or for purchase very often put something on the cork board outside Sandy's restaurant.
Is that his name Ken?
No.
Bob, I'll take it. Thank you.
Anything else?
No, that's it.
So, Steve, if you, you know, teacher students in their IFR flight plan, teacher students to write down VFR GPS in the remarks section. You know, it's kind of like going wink wink.
That works.
No comments, it's been a busy past 30 days. I'm good right now. Thanks.
Have comments. First of all, thank you, Susan. I'm really happy to have you back. Thanks for putting in all the extra work the last few weeks. Again, these guys, they amaze me. I want to thank Gail. I know they get paid to do this job. They really have gone above and beyond. And, you know, we are, you know, adjusting as a board, and they have to adjust to a different way of thinking. So I really want to thank them. The mayor is doing the State of the City address at 7 o'clock on the 21st at City Hall. So if anybody wants to go to that, just make sure you know. And don't forget, really pass the word on the HB 124 thing for Thursday. I think the more of us who show support, the better chance we're going to have to get that through. And thank you, all of them, for being here.
I'd like to first of all thank the entire board. This has been a very challenging 30 days with the change in personnel in the office in two positions, and everyone has really pitched in and taken on a little more of the work to help make the airport run smoothly. We have a challenge with the winter weather, but the planes are still landing and taking off, and we have our operations, and I want to thank everyone for their efforts on that.
I got one other quick thing.
Sure.
Just reminding me. I do want to thank the Gale guys. I know everybody knows them as they're our airport engineers. Some of you know the guys better than others. But these guys work really hard, and we were asking them to really, you know, pull
pull some rabbits out of some hats and really, you know, and respond, and they did. They stepped up the plate. Bob and I and the guys were dodging snowstorms and trying to make meetings work and rescheduling, and it was nutty. So things happened at a very, very rapid pace. I'm super appreciative of it, and I just want to make sure everybody really does realize there's a ton that they do, not just here once a month, but the wheels are constantly grinding. So I just want to make sure everybody really does understand that. I know historically there may have been some varying perceptions, I'll leave it at that, but a hardworking group of guys, and they really are, they do have our best interests in mind, totally, 100%. You ask them to do something, they'll be honest with you and say, we could look at it, we could check it out, probably the answer is no, probably the answer is yes, or hey, by the way, like this afternoon, I got an idea. And it went from, I got an idea, to looks like a feasible solution, like that.
Was a bad snap.
Like that. Like that one. Not like that one. That was 2 o'clock. That was 4:30. So, I just wanted to put that out.
Thank you.
Okay, I'd like to make a motion to go into non-public session to discuss personnel.
One second. Roll call, please.
Chairman Rosenblum.
Yes.
Vice Chair Cushing Adams.
Yes.
Director DeKalb.
Yes.
Director Tim.
Yes.
Director Tractor, yes.
Motion carries. Thank you all. We're taking a 5-minute break.
Who seconded it?
I did.
Nice to meet you. Yeah. Really helpful. Yeah. 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 Ye